You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio. And it's Just Women for the next hour, talking to some very interesting, very intriguing and, of course, inspiring women. Now, I'm Alison Florence and my co-presenter today is Doreen Pipe. Hello, Doreen.
Well, hello there, Alison. Seems ages since we've been together.
I know, but I know. We're here now, aren't
we're
we?
We're here now on what should be a sunny day, but it nearly is. Well, today we've got three guests coming into our studio and they're going to be of interest to many of the listeners, I'm sure. And if you'd like to join in with any questions or comments, do email us at studio@brooklynsradio.co.uk. You know we'd love to hear from you.
Well, later in the programme we'll be hearing from Katie Taylor, and she's a public relations consultant from TT Communications, and they help ambitious businesses move to the next level. And then another very interesting lady, Emma Randall from Mindful Eating, and she'll be talking to us about the psychology behind our diets. But to start today's programme, I'd like to welcome into the studio... I'd like to welcome into the studio Rebecca Newenham, who's the owner of Get Ahead VA. So welcome into the studio.
Oh, thanks, ladies. Lovely to be here.
Now, first of all, can you tell us what Get Ahead VA actually stands for? And I know it's virtual assistant, but what does it actually do?
Of course, yes. So... Get Ahead is a virtual marketing and business services agency. So I have a team of 25 and it's my job to match my most relevant member of my team to the client. And we do anything from telephone answering, PA work, right through to good old social media and marketing. So really anything to help a business owner in their busy day-to-day life.
Well, I find it quite fascinating that there actually are virtual assistants, because this is completely new to me. So tell us, how do the virtual assistants engage with their clients?
Yeah, good question. We often get asked this. So it's my job very much, as I said, to match the most relevant member of my team. Then we will always encourage everyone to have a face-to-face meeting, because I think that's critical on every level, and bonding and really understanding who's working with who. And then it's about being very clear in expectations, what kind of work's involved. And you'd be amazed at how much more efficient somebody can be when they're not sitting as part of the team, sitting around the desk chatting, and they're doing everything remotely, but there's still, you know, a fantastic way of communicating online, especially, and with Skype and on the phone. But it's, it really is a great way of getting the job done without wasting time.
Now, that was exactly the part that I was having to come to terms with in my brain. Mm. You know, you were sitting around having a meeting and you talked half an hour about the weather, the tea, the everything else and that. So this is a much more time-efficient way of using...
Exactly. Yes, we're all about being efficient with our time and flexible as well. So numbers of hours can grow or decline on a monthly basis depending on what the client's needs are. And that's what they really like. I'm not saying you have to commit to X numbers of hours each month. It is very fluid, which everyone seems to really like.
Okay, so is this working on like a 9-to-5, or do your virtual assistants work when you finish your desk time or whatever that is? Do they work late into the evening? How does that work?
That's a good question, Dorian. It really varies. So sometimes some VAs actually have a few spare hours each day, and that will often be perhaps when kids have gone to bed, and that's possibly when they work best. And then some people are very much night owls, where they work right into the night, which I certainly am not, or people that wake up very early and they can fit it in that way. So we're always very clear with the client as to how time specific the jobs are, and then we make sure that's how I work in terms of my matching as well. I make sure that they've got the best person for the job so that it can get done within deadlines and things like that.
I mean, it sounds really interesting, and if I'm honest, seeing the expression VA is a new one to me. You know, I Victoria and Albert is as near as it will come to me. But it's a very interesting concept and it makes sense. So do these VAs feel part of the team, despite the fact that they are displaced from maybe an office or...
Yes, no. And over the last 18 months, I've worked really hard on making the team actually meet up physically as well. And although I've got a team of 25, they are spread out around the UK, but we've organically grown around Surrey because I'm based in Guildford. So we have quarterly meetups, so we do workshops. So I'm all about giving the team additional adding trainings. We've got one coming up in a couple of weeks, and I know the team really benefit from that. And then we have Christmas and summer parties, and I love the fact that their whole family will come as well, so that everyone buys into that whole concept, that they understand more about what their partners are doing.
It just sounds like a totally new concept and a sensible one, because the services that you're offering, on the marketing services, you've got social media management, email marketing, blogging, PR, marketing and design. Yeah, you don't physically need to be necessarily in the office for doing that, do you?
No, exactly.
So nice niche little area. Yes. How did you come to think about it then?
Well, I started it 6.5 years ago. I've got 3 children and my youngest daughter was just about to start infant school. So that was really my time to be totally up for doing a new challenge. I've been a retail buyer in a pre-mummy life and didn't particularly want to go back racing back up into London. And my mother had run, when I was growing up, a tutorial agency, which was all about matching tuition for school children and for having a bank of teachers that could match together. So I could see how that worked for her and for my brother and I growing up. So I was able to sort of replicate a similar
Well done, mama.
Exactly. And virtual assistant, very American term. The states are ahead of us on that. So
there's lots of VAs in America. Mm. Okay, fair enough. And so are you one of the first virtual assistant groups,
So where we're different, where we're different, Doreen, is that we are much more of an agency base. So I knew I didn't want to do the client work myself. I knew I wanted to build a team around me where I could play to my strengths, which is in the business development and the networking, and I could provide interesting work to ladies who have, probably 70% of the team are mums, so they wanted something that was interesting that might not know where to go to get it.
Right.
So I would find it, and then I was able to place it with the most relevant member of the team, and they get interesting work to do, and I make sure they get paid. They haven't got to worry about sort of doing the nightmare of sort of chasing for payments and things. So for them, it's steady work that can be varied, and they can ramp it up if they've got more availability.
Yeah. You say it started 6 years ago. Has the different things that you're asked to do got very different over those 6 years?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Alison. I think social media and marketing has hugely come on. So when I first started the business, we were known very much as the virtual assistant agency, but the marketing services has been an area that I could see was really growing. So we've sort of developed that as a separate part of the business, but we all know, good old social media, got to be on it, you've got to be consistent, but mostly people struggle to actually know what to say. So that's where we've come in, to enable people to have a consistent offering.
I'd fall into the latter category. I don't know what to say on social media, so I don't.
So would you actually tell a business that unless they're on social media, they're not going to succeed as well? Would you give them that sort of advice?
I would say if social media forms part of your marketing mix, and you really need to have some form of representation there. There is nothing worse than just having an account and nothing on it, or something that hasn't been updated for a long time. So if you're going to commit to it, you commit to it and you're consistent. You don't have to put lots and lots of things out there, but it needs to be relevant, and you need to be sharing and caring, not just broadcasting about yourself, because I think that's where people fall down.
It's all about me and this brick wall that I'm standing by. Having a cake.
Yes. Interesting. And it's about getting a balance. People want to see the personality behind the brand, so it's a great way of giving you that chance.
Especially if they've got a nice personality. I mean, if they're a bit boring, they might not want to.
I noticed on here as well a super idea of holiday cover, which must be really difficult with lots of SMEs. When you go on holiday, you're attached to a mobile, aren't you, or your iPad. So this must be a godsend to be able to sort of key into you guys.
Yeah, and that works really nicely. And I think especially for a business owner that perhaps doesn't have a permanent team to support them, and if anyone's like me, your business is your baby, you've grown up, you've made this amazing business, actually how can you feel confident about lying on the beach and totally switching off? So yeah, it works really nicely. We can manage people's emails and that kind of thing.
And would you actually get in touch with them when they're on holiday? Is that part of what you would offer to keep them up to date on what their business is doing?
Even
if they are on holiday.
Yeah, we would often go through their inbox, delete lots of things, perhaps flag up a couple of things they would like them to check. And actually, that works nicely as well, so the business owner feels engaged enough but able to relax as well at the same time.
Is there any sort of work that you would actually turn down from a business?
No, but I do now have much more of a confidence about knowing if we're not going to be the right fit for somebody.
What sort of thing wouldn't you be the right thing for, do you think?
I think possibly very specific requirements on the marketing. If I don't have that resource in-house, so some people might come and want a particular industry experience, and if I haven't got it, I really haven't got it, and we can't make it up. So as I said, I'm much more confident now at saying I can't help you, but I've got a huge network which I've obviously organically grown over the last 6.5 years, so I'm all up for linking people together and sharing it that way. But I think honesty is critical. You can't take on a job, and I say that to all my team, if you don't feel comfortable taking a job on, you must say so from the beginning.
Your integrity is key, isn't it? You can't be expected to know about the gas and oil industry, I suppose, as opposed to a design agency. They're hugely different, but have got similar needs perhaps in portraying themselves. I find this whole thing quite different, I think, is the word I want to use, because I still visualise people sitting round a table, and the whole concept that you can bring in this team and, you know, take the weight off of the shoulders of the business owner. And a lot of them SMEs, that way you tend to be core business.
No, absolutely. So generally SMEs, anything, you know, we say from a fashion designer to a financial advisor, huge, don't have a core niche, although interesting, over the last month we started working with about 4 female coaches, and that just happens to be bit of a flip, but it's interesting. It's people that get the support they need, and they know where to come and find it, which is always great.
Well, probably people who know that they need support.
That's half the battle.
That is half of it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Excellent. So did you ever consider, when you were working, so did you ever kind of think, no, I'm going to open an office and I'm going to sit there and wait for people to come, or was it always going to be online in your head?
Yeah, it was always going to be online. I'm quite good at telling people what I'm doing, so it was all about sharing what I was up to doing. And then actually one of a really close friend of mine provided me with the connection to 2 of our first clients. So I've learned that you've got to be out there telling people what you're doing, but also showing an interest in other people to actually start generating the clients that you want to work with.
And you network a lot, do you?
I do, yes. I run a networking group in Guildford once a month.
Oh, what's that called?
Connect Surrey, called Guildford Ladies.
Oh, excellent.
We don't sit having cups of tea all the time, but no, it's great. So that's once an all-women one. I really love mixed networking. So Connect Surrey, run out of Guildford, offer a lot of networking groups I go to, but I'm also a member of one in London, and it's they're everywhere, but it's about finding the right type of group that works for you. That would be my recommendation.
Absolutely.
Try as many as you can. And we've just launched my first franchise, so Carrie is running Reading franchise for me, and she's gone today to her first networking group, and I've sort of tasked her with going out and really finding and experiencing all the different networking groups, but then committing to at least one that you will go to on a regular basis, because again, you need to build up those relationships with people.
And there are a lot out there to choose from, aren't there? BNI was a historically traditional one. Is it Athena?
Yeah, Athena, Business Biscotti, First Friday. There are hundreds, but it's great to meet different people. It's the face-to-face connections that are so important.
Very important, wouldn't you agree, Alison?
I think so, yeah, because you can really sum someone up by their eye contact and their body language, can't you?
The first 30 seconds?
Yes, even less, I think,
Doreen. You want to work with them or not.
No, absolutely.
Say first impressions in the first 10 seconds, don't they?
Is that quick,
I think. Yes, I think
that's
it is.
Speedy.
Yeah. So do you ever have to turn people down because their expectations are unrealistic? If they said, oh, I need this by tomorrow morning or something, and it's 10 o'clock at night.
Yes, and again, I think that's come with experience as well, Alison, because I think when you first start out, you want to help everybody and you want to be the go-to person. But once you start having a confidence to sort of say, well, actually, that isn't realistic for me, but, you know, I do know of other people that have, say, 24-hour service and perhaps are working abroad, so I can link people together. But no, I'm all about doing things in a reasonable time frame, but want to go the extra mile when I can, but only when it's realistic.
So do some people who actually work on your team have different expectations about what they want to do, and they say, well, I don't mind working the night if it needs it?
Yes, absolutely. So that's part of my sort of recruitment drive, is really understanding what hours people have got available and making sure they keep in touch with me on a regular basis if things like that change. And sometimes we'll get to a stage where they've worked as a VA for me for 4 or 5 years and then say, actually, I'm now ready to go back into a permanent job, or you know, their situation's changed. And I don't see that then as a negative. I see it very much as a positive.
I'd see that as a real, a huge positive, actually. Yeah. And looking at your face, you clearly do see that as a positive. Going back, because some people do need that interaction. interaction of literally leaning across a desk with something physical, that person there. And how lovely that you've kept them going.
I feel like the mother hen, and off they go into the. Well, they never lose touch completely, so it's great.
Well, that's excellent. I mean, I found this really refreshing, Alison. Yeah, I've never heard of. We do lots of interviews on here.
See that.
And I have honestly never seen. Well, I haven't been around to interview somebody who's got VAs all over the place. Mm. Well, God on you.
Now we know what they are as well, don't we?
I thought it was
Victoria and Albert that I researched it. So are you looking for anyone to join your team at the moment then?
Oh, yeah, I am, Alison. Okay. I'm also looking for new franchisees. So we're going to be very much territory driven. So Carrie's running Basingstoke and up to Reading. But if there's anyone with... a need, I guess, for buying a business in a box, which is what we can offer. I offer, you know, fantastic to support somebody from a well-known brand, but we are all about the mentoring and getting someone launched off their feet. So, no, I'd be really interested.
Now, people who would like to join your team, then, what sort of skills are you looking for and how would they actually approach you?
So, for virtual assistants, I'm looking for anyone that's got admin, PA experience, and also specifics like marketing, social media. So anyone that wants some flexible work, I'm always up for listening.
And do they have to commit to so many hours a week or anything?
No
commitment at all.
So I will match them to the most relevant client. And the one thing I always say, especially to new team members, is I can't actually guarantee how many hours are going to come along, but often I find if I get a new member of the team, then suddenly the perfect client comes my way.
And do you have different rates of pay for the different jobs that people do, or is it mainly a standard rate?
Fairly standard rate, but separate from admin and a different rate for marketing, but it's done, each job's done very much on a per job basis.
And if anyone's interested in this, which I'm sure they will be, you'll probably have loads of missed calls when you get home. How do they contact you?
They're probably best to go to my website, so that's getaheadva.com, or to ring us on 01483 332220.
And would that be the same for the franchise details
for everyone,
as well?
That all comes into my telephone answering. Right.
So, which area would you actually cover yourself under your company?
I will hold on to Surrey and London for the time being. That's not just it's not up for grabs. You know, it may well be if the right person comes.
So, it's quite a large area then if you're covering London, the whole of London.
So we're nationwide at the moment, so that seems quite small when I look at it that way.
Amazing. And do you get a chance to actually do any work, or are you mainly the organisation person?
I've chosen not to do client work. So, my work is managing my growing team. And then also might have a family as well. So it's that balance, which is why I set it up.
I think with 25 VAs plus a family and a business, you're doing okay. I think that's enough. You've got the balance.
No, I love the balance. It's really interesting.
And I think the amazing thing, your children, when they're older, will appreciate having their mum around.
As I did with
totally.
Mine.
Exactly.
You don't get your time back again.
No, you don't. That's when you form your relationship, don't you? And set their standards and things. Totally agree with you. It's really, really nice, isn't it? Right, well, congratulations on that. Good luck with everything else. And if you want to come back and tell us about things anytime in the future, we'd love to have you back.
We would really love to have you back to hear how the franchise is going.
Thank you.
So do put that in your diary for the future.
I've loved it. Thank you very much.
Now, in the second part of our programme today, we'll be talking to Katie Taylor about public relations and how important they are in making projects successful. So stay with us.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Do you need help with your Apple Mac but you don't know where to go? Rafael is your local Apple certified support professional. He can help you with any of your Apple needs, such as setting up iCloud accounts and family sharing. Or perhaps you'd simply like to learn a few new things about your Apple Mac. Simply visit www.rafaelkukla.com or call 07907 795000 today to arrange an on-site visit in the comfort of your home or office. That's 07907 795000 for peace of mind Apple support.
In Guildford and the County of Surrey, there's a wide range of things to see, do and enjoy. If you're looking for somewhere to eat, somewhere to stay, or somewhere to take the family, or perhaps you want to visit the countryside or indulge your passion for art, culture and heritage, explore bustling towns or take in a show, find a place that's romantic and peaceful. Whatever you're looking for, you'll be spoilt for choice. You'll find so many things to do. Visit guildford.com is the place to go to plan your days and nights out. You can also book tickets, making us your one-stop shop. So go on, log on now to visit guildford.com. great times are just a click away.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome back to Just Women, our weekly talk show. The second of our guests today is Katie Taylor, and she's going to be talking to us about TT Communications. So welcome to our studio today.
Thank you.
Now, you'll have to tell us a little bit about what you do first. And can you tell us a little bit about how you got there? You know, you can't have always been in communications. So what sparked off your interest in it?
Oh, OK. Well, I am a PR and media consultant. So I work with businesses, helping them to raise their profile and build their brands. I actually started off in publishing a long time ago, and I worked in London, really enjoyed it, and I love writing, and I like to be quite creative, and I ended up getting a job in government in Whitehall, working as a PR and media relations officer, and I did that for about 20 years, and I worked with all sorts of interesting politicians and MPs in Cabinet Office, Department of Transport, DFID, Department for International Development, and ended up at a regional arm of government called the Central Office of Information. So I did that for a long time and then decided to break away and set up on my own, which I did 6 years ago now.
Gosh, it's 6 years. Seems to be a magic time in the studio today, doesn't it, Alison? What a fascinating start to any career, though.
Yes, yeah, it was really interesting. And if you're, I mean, I'm very interested in politics and always have been. So it was, you know, great fun being right in the heart of everything. And I was there during the sort of Tony Blair years and the end of John Major and that sort of time.
It was interesting.
Goodness and there are huge, you know, it was the first time there'd been a Labour government in power for a long time when Tony Blair got in. So there was a huge amount of change going on in government at that time. And it was really fascinating to be sort of right at the heart of it while there was a lot of sort of major policy changes going on. So I really enjoyed it, and it was a very interesting job, and it really gave me a fantastic grounding in PR and media, actually, because it's very fast moving, and you know, you're dealing with all sorts of different situations every day, really different types of media stories and news stories and responding to things in the national press, and you know, it's very, you know, it's fantastic grounding for
I can't think
business.
Of a better one now. Sitting listening to this, can you, Alice?
I was going to say, did the experience you learnt in the years before you did the business make you decide what was actually needed from your business, do you think?
I think it did, because, you know, I think it's difficult to get such good experience anywhere else because you're working with a huge diverse range of subjects and a huge number of different types of people. And it did make me see, certainly when I was working at the end with the Central Office of Information on regional PR and media, a lot of it was about proactively promoting government policies in the regional press. And that made me think, actually, I could do this for my own, you know, for my own clients. I don't have to be doing this in government. And, you know, I was working for lots of government departments trying to do it. So when I set up my own business, I sort of took what I knew and I thought I applied that to the businesses that I was working with.
Was that more relaxing to do rather than working for government?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, very much so, yes. No, working for government is quite stressful, actually. And you do a lot of weekend work as well, because you know, particularly now with the media being 24/7, you always had to be on duty.
It almost sounds relentless, actually.
It was quite relentless. And you have, you know, you had a rota for duties at the weekends and all that sort of thing. So it was very, very full on. So actually felt nice to step back from that quite stressful environment.
But to be in total control of your own destiny here.
Yeah.
So when you started this, what kind of clients were you looking for? You're probably going to say not politicians at this point.
Well, I wanted clients that were interesting to me. And I think my first client was a healthcare business. And I'd been doing a lot of work with the Smoking Cessation Service, which is part of the NHS, and they help people give up smoking. And I've been doing that with the Department of Health in government, and I really luckily found, well, it was actually through a government connection that I then started working with a private client who was doing something very similar. So that was actually my first client outside of government. And then I thought, well, actually, I really like working on healthcare, and I like work. There were certain issues that I'm interested in, sort of sustainability and green issues. And I knew I was probably better working with much with sort of businesses, business to business type stuff, rather than beauty products or food. And, you know, that was very alien to what I'd done in government. So I knew I would be better off sticking with businesses that sort of worked on similar subjects to what I'd done when I was working in government.
I think they always say, don't they, if you're interested in a subject, you're more likely to devote time and knowledge and enthusiasm to it as well. So do you actually have a team supporting you, or is this literally just you on your own?
Well, it's me on my own, but I do sort of bring people in to help me. So I did some media training for a client recently, and I brought an old colleague of mine to help me with that. So I bring people in when I need to bring people in, but I do a lot of it on my own.
And what sort of companies do you tend to work for now?
I've actually started working with quite a few charities. I love working for charity because it's about building awareness, and that's what PR is great at doing.
Isn't it always the case, though, a charity thinks everybody knows what they do, and it comes as a thundering shock when actually no, we don't, because you live that moment and you have to portray that outside. And this must be a wonderful market, as you say, to work in, to
it is interesting
bring that out.
Yes, because also when you start, you know, I advise right from the beginning, really. I've worked with charities where I've looked at their website and I've said, well, your website's great, but actually I don't know what you do. So you need to explain that on your front page. And, you know, we work to get the messaging right and you know, the timing, the objectives. And we do all that strategic stuff first so that we know that when we're promoting particular stories for a business, we can always have the right messaging in place, and we're always saying the right thing about the business and getting that word out so that people really understand what they do. And that's so key, not just for charity but for businesses as well.
Grant, I'm looking at some of your clients here. You've got Lux Yard Clinic.
A local chiropractic clinic, actually, and very interesting because the lady that runs it, Tona, is a real sort of entrepreneur, and she has all sorts of amazing creative ideas. I think she's been on this show, actually.
She has, yes.
She has all sorts of creative ideas about sort of helping to get people to be more healthy, and that she was lovely to work with, actually. Yes.
That's really nice, and you can say that about a client. I mean, there must be some you walk away and go, thank the Lord for that.
There are always a few, yes, there are always a few. But I've been very lucky. Most of my clients are lovely and very nice to work with. And, you know, a key really to success is if they work with you. It's no good if you have a client who wants the PR and wants to be in the papers or whatever, but doesn't want to tell you what they do and share information with you. It's an uphill struggle. So, you know, it's key to sort of get somebody who's as interested from the other side as you are from your side.
Well, it's interesting because sitting here beside you, I find you're actually quite relaxed, which, you know, must be nice when you're working with clients, because you're working with somebody who's pent up anyway, just, oh, you're thinking, oh, I'm even worse than before I started, sort of thing. Yeah. So that's lovely. You've got a very nice disposition. And so that must be a real plus when you walk into the room, you know, so say, well, I am here to help you, kind of thing.
Yes, I think so. And I think that probably comes from years of experience, because I feel, you know, I've been doing this for about 30 years, so I sort of
You don't
feel,
look like it. We have to say this to you. Definitely don't.
That's very kind, but I started young, of course. but I think that the more that the more experience you have in something, the more that things don't faze me, really, because I've done most of what's thrown at me, I've come across before, really, so... Yeah, that helps me.
Because when you started 30 years ago, I suppose social media was something that just wasn't around, was it? So no. Do you find that social media has become very much more part of people's businesses now?
Yes, it
and
has.
Is it always good or not always?
Well, it depends. It can be good. You can use it. It's great for PR because it's a great sort of free way to promote your business if you do it strategically and if you do it in the right way. There's no point just sort of, you know, firing stuff off and not really thinking about what you're doing. But yes, I think social media is a good thing, but, you know, there are downsides to it. And
what would be the downside that you'd say to people?
Well, if people don't think about what they're saying, and, you know, people can tweet about things and then get absolutely hammered by people, or it can cause problems with their business because they haven't really thought through
just
what
one inappropriate comment knocked out. It's at speed,
and it's everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did a lot of work with crisis communications in government, so, you know, I can help people sort of reel back from that horrific position they might be in, but really you should never get there in the first place.
So would you ever advise people to have a word with you before they put something on social media so that you can advise whether that's a good thing or not?
Yeah, and people do that, you know. If people want to talk about a particular issue, particularly if it's contentious, they might say, do you think it's a good idea to do this? And I might say, I wouldn't, not at the moment. I think you should sort of not do that. And also you have to make sure that what you're tweeting about or you're posting about is fits with your business messages. And, you know, if it doesn't fit, then you shouldn't be doing it.
No, definitely. Because some people use social media to get rid of frustrations and, you know, say, oh, I just don't like that, I'm going to put it there. And then, of course, it's too late. And you just think, I wish I hadn't done that, don't you?
Yeah, you used to be able to take a breath before you made a contentious comment.
Count to 10 and have a deep breath.
Because I also run PR sort of beginners workshops, and we do cover social media. And I always say to people, you know, plan what you want to say. Don't just sort of throw it out there without really thinking about it. That's so important.
I was also looking at, I mean, obviously you've got different clients tonight, and there's only a few that we're looking at here, but a lovely one here called Mamas and Beans Cafe in Godalming.
A
lovely title.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy working with this little
group? Yeah, they were one of my first clients, actually, and they were setting up a cafe in Godalming, which is no longer there, sadly, but it's a great place, and they just basically, it was a launch event, really, and so we just got the word out there as far and wide as possible, and we made sure that we had a huge number of people there on the day, and it was a really nice event, actually. You got a nice bit of coverage in the local paper, and, you know, that's what she wanted, so yes
you should sound like a happy bunny reading this here. But a huge difference from that to the CAA.
Yes, Civil Aviation Authority. Yes, I've done some work with them over the years, and I like working with them because I spent 6 years at the Department of Transport. And although people say, oh, transport is such a boring subject, actually, I don't think it is. It's a really interesting subject because it's very political. And certainly when I was working in government, there was a lot of politics around rail privatisation and sort of paying for toll roads and civil aviation policy, and I just find that whole subject area really fascinating.
But really quite interesting. And as a slight aside, I went to the British Airways Museum last week, which is on the edge of Heathrow. What a fascinating place that is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're interested in transport, go and have a look at that.
I will. I am interested in transport, and I certainly will go.
And Brooklyn's Museum just along the road.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
Bus Museum.
Surrounded by them.
Yeah.
But so if you were looking for your ideal client, what would you like to sort of get across today, you know, say, well, I offer this, or is there not an ideal client for you? It's just the client that you feel I can work with you.
Well, it is very much a client I feel I can work with. I mean, they need to be serious about what they want to do. You know, they need to have plans in place, hopefully have some sort of media or a marketing plan that they want to carry out. And I think it is about personality, and it's about them wanting to do the work with me, because I find that PR works best when you've got two sides working together. And, you know, they come up with some great ideas, I come up with some great ideas, and, you know, when you put them all together, you get a really nice sort of long-term plan that works for the business.
Can you actually teach people PR skills, or do you have to be a certain type of person to have them?
I think you can teach people to a certain extent. You can certainly teach them the basics, you know, how to write a press release, how to approach your local newspaper, thinking about their social media outlets and how they should best tweet and post and all that sort of thing. You can teach them the mechanics of it, and it's up to them how far they take it, really. But you actually have to put the time and the effort in if you want to do it well.
So if anyone would like to contact you, how can they do that to get your help?
I do have a website, which is ttcommunications.co.uk, but they can also link in with me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. So, people can get hold of me whichever way they feel is most helpful for them.
So a good example of all the things you can do for them by being on it yourself.
Indeed.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on our Just Women programme today.
It's been fascinating. I've really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Very interesting. And in the final part of our programme today, we'll be talking about food.
A favourite subject there, Alison.
Lots of nutrition advice, and also looking at the interesting subject of why we personally make certain choices of what we eat. And Emma Randall will be our guest, so don't go away.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Our relaunched shop and post office in Church Street, Weybridge, has an improved retail offer, and we provide the vital services you need from your local post office. We have 20 foreign currencies on demand and the new simple and safe travel money card that's prepaid multiple currencies on one secure card. Plus, for the last 10 years, we've been number one for travel insurance, as recognised by the UK travel industry. And for tax-free savings, we have the Premier Cash ISA. So pop in and see us at 24 to 26 Church Street, Weybridge. We are open 7 days a week, including Sundays 10 till 2. The Post Office, Weybridge. Convenience on your doorstep.
Enjoy a family day out at the Kempton Steam Museum and the Hampton and Kempton Waterworks Railway. The railway operates every Sunday and on Saturday the 20th of May. The Kempton Great Engine, the largest triple in the world, will be in steam on Saturday the 20th and Sunday the 21st of May. And there will also be a display of fascinating stationary engines. Follow the brown signs to the Kempton Steam Museum and to the railway from the elevated sections of the A316. To find out more, see kemptonsteam.org or hamptonkemptonrailway.org.uk. The magic of railway on your doorstep, every Sunday, 10:30 till 4.
I know how to avoid a soggy bottom. I know the name of cinema's most famous white shark. I know all the things you can do with a Maris Piper. And I definitely know the TV show that made this music famous. But I don't know my state pension.
There's a simple way to find out when you can get your state pension and how much it'll be. Search Your State Pension and get to know yours.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
And welcome back to the programme. And now something which has always interested me and something which I think has become more and more relevant, as everyone out there will probably realise, there's so many publicity issues these days about what's good to eat, what's bad to eat, what we shouldn't eat. So today as our guest we've got Emma Randall, and hopefully she's going to make some things clearer. So welcome, Emma.
Thank you.
How did you first get interested in the psychology of eating? What was your first memory of food?
I'm not sure, really. I did have a weight problem when I was in my late teens, my early 20s. And I think as a family, we'd always been interested in trying different diets, because that's what people did, and especially in the 1980s. It was all about the low-fat diets and Rosemary Connolly. And I think because I got to a point with my weight and I thought, well, enough is enough, really. I need to do something about it. So I just started exploring in my own way, rather than going on a commercial diet. I just sort of started eating sensibly. But it took time. But I think that was good, because it was a whole learning process. And as a result of that, it meant that I kept the weight off for much longer than if you just did a traditional diet.
Well, you certainly look very good now.
I was about to say that was an advert for this. It's fantastic.
When you were researching yourself, I mean, how did you do that? Because obviously not through following other people's diets. Did you just look online and see?
I mean, I think I took information from different diet books, because there were so many diet books out there, and they still are today.
Probably more than ever now.
Yeah, and they're everywhere, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I did. I just sort of took information here and there, and my sisters, you know, were interested, and we'd all sort of, we'd put our heads together, really, and kind of work out what it was that we really needed to do. My father had also sort of had diet things on the wall that he used to try to stick to, so it's not like we're all obsessed with dieting or anything, but I think from an early age I just learnt about healthy eating in a very natural way without really sort of trying. It just happened.
So weight issues tend to be an enormous issue today, perhaps more than ever, particularly amongst young children and things, don't they?
Absolutely.
So do you think it's going to be part of the school curriculum or anything to teach about diet?
I really wish it could be.
I wish so too. Yeah. I genuinely do. That and first aid would be my, you know, scrap something. I might even scrap IT, because they all know how to do it anyway. It's so vital to understand what you're doing to your bodies.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, when I was at school, you do home economics, and you might talk about macronutrients like proteins and carbs and fats, and that was about it. And I really think it's time that schools kind of, you know, got going with it. Because, you know, children have type 2 diabetes. In the past, that was just adults. Yes, I know the curriculum is full. It's full, and teachers are busy, but I think, you know, I have been to a few schools and I've done some talks and they've really appreciated it, but they don't really have time to put it on the curriculum.
And it truly is interesting. I have two grandchildren. Okay, one of them is two, coming on three in September. That's Joey. And then I have Feli, who is eight in January. The way that they eat is so different. So different, I can't begin to tell you. To take Feli out for a meal is a nightmare. She eats pizza, or she might eat McDonald's, but we can't enjoy that experience of eating properly with her. Joey, on the other hand, for whatever reason, is so different. He, to me, has got the ideal attitude to food. He passes a fruit bowl and he grabs a piece and starts eating it. He eats fruit.
That's
he
really
eats
great.
Fresh the carrot and all this kind of thing, and I think that's wonderful. How come one of them does it and the other one doesn't? You know, there are different mums and dads, I, you know, give you that, but it is just so I'm going to use the word odd, but it is odd watching two young children who essentially come from the same family and they have totally different ways of eating. So that must be a huge challenge for you when you're looking at, you know, adults who perhaps, as you say, you have sisters, you can't all be doing the same things with your food and that. How does it work?
I mean, it's so much about exposure from an early age, it really is. I think that if you give a child too much choice as to what they want to eat, so if you say, what would you like to eat tonight, well, don't give them, you know, it's too big. You know, you say maybe give them a couple of options or something, but don't say, oh, what would you like to eat? Because the child doesn't really have the ability at that age to know what's best for them. And they don't necessarily have the creativity of what meals could be knocked up. So it's exposure from the parents. The parents have a heck of a job to do. And I really, really sympathise with parents who are really, really busy. But, you know, when it comes to a child's health and your own health, you know, that's the thing. If you can cook meals that include the whole family, and maybe tweak them here and there so that you don't all have to have identical meals. But, you know, have in your head a repertoire of food as well, because I think people get decision fatigue. What shall I eat today? And then they think, oh, forget it, I'm going to just go and get a takeaway. But just have maybe four or five meals in your head, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinners, maybe a couple of breakfast ideas, a couple of lunch ideas, and then about five dinner ideas. And you don't have to keep thinking about it.
And this is the basis of your philosophy in the mindful eating.
It is very much so, because people are on automatic pilot. You know, our brains like to operate in automatic mode. We don't really want to have to think about things. So the trouble is then we set up bad habits and do those automatically day in, day out. So what I try to do is help people to set up new automatic habits so that you've got a system of automatic eating. Where you don't have to keep making decisions every single day, what shall I eat? Because you've got that repertoire in your head. But obviously it's about baby steps. You can't expect yourself to become a perfect eater overnight. And I say perfect, but nobody can eat perfectly. I believe in sort of 80-20. So 80% of the time you're trying to eat as best you can, and then say 20% of the time will allow for, say, social occasions. Because the problem is people kind of procrastinate when it comes to eating better. They say, oh, well, I've got a social event, or I'll do it, I'll start on Monday.
Yeah, it's always that, isn't it? I'll start, well, next week after the weekend.
Yeah. They need to work through social events rather than seeing them as a big blockade.
Because someone told me it was equally as stressful to start turning things down to, oh, I can't eat that. It does your body as much harm as if you ate it occasionally.
Well, and psychologically it
psychologically,
does.
Psychologically, exactly.
You start resenting it, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have good foods and bad foods, and then you eat a so-called bad food, you then label yourself. Yes. There's a bit of self-judgment going on. I'm bad because I've just eaten a bad food, therefore I'm rubbish at dieting. You get that inner critical voice, oh well, I may as well just give up.
Because that's another thing that you do. You're not just about the eating, are you? You're about why they do the psychological
side.
So tell us a bit about that, because most people just deal with diets and that's it. But the fact that you deal with the psychological, why do I do this, why do I want this, that's amazing.
Yes, I mean, the whole kind of mindful thing has become very popular. And I think that mindful eating, the name of my business, really encapsulates what I do, because I am a hybrid. You know, as I say, I can look at the what you eat, but look at the how and the why you eat, you know. And getting people to really think about, you know, what am I going to eat, or whether I'm going to eat? Do I actually really need to eat? What type of hunger am I currently experiencing? Is it eye hunger, i.e. am I eating just because it looks good? Is it obviously emotional hunger? Is it boredom hunger? Is it stress hunger? I mean, there's more than 10 different types of hunger.
Yeah.
And people just need to pause, because the thing is, we're always rushing around and we just don't give ourselves time to think about our food choices. And we just need to be like, engage the brain and kind of get out of that automatic mode, because it's the automaticness of our eating that is so damaging.
Also, is there, you're saying this is, it's an emotional thing. Is it tied in with the clock? Is it a good idea to kind of, everybody kind of says you should eat breakfast because that kickstarts the day, so you're working your way through, presume, breakfast, lunch and an evening meal. But should that evening meal be before 8 o'clock at night, nine? You know, what kind of a, is that linked with it, or don't you mind, providing you feel that it's the right time to eat?
Well, that's the thing, it's about feeling. And I think that if you use external cues, i.e. if you eat according to the clock, or eat according to what a diet book says, or whether somebody else is eating, or the smell and sight of food, you're not really getting in tune with your internal cues to eat. And the thing is about diets don't get you thinking. You sort of blindly follow the diet so that you're not actually, somebody else is telling you what to eat and how many grams of it to eat. If you could become a more intuitive eater and say, actually, what foods suit me? Become more discriminating. So eat what you really want to eat. Obviously, try to bear in mind the nutritional factors as well. But then pass on the rest, you know, so that you're not just hoovering everything up. You're actually being a lot more discriminating, because a lot of people aren't very discriminating. They kind of, if they see it, they eat it.
Because one thing I was going to say, if you find out it's a social reason or a psychological reason why people are eating, how could you advise them on that? Would you advise them to go and see somebody to talk through their stress and things like that, or not? Or can you just deal with it yourself?
I mean, I have dealt with people who are, you know, class themselves as sort of binge eaters. That's a label they've kind of given themselves. I don't have a clinical diagnosis of that. However, I don't work with severe eating disorders, and I would refer them on. So I don't deal, for example, with anorexia, because obviously how I got into this was I was interested in obesity and more of the overeating kind of aspect. So in some cases, if I feel people have got a severe eating issue, then I would refer them to a counsellor, maybe, you know, food addiction counsellor or something. They need to go and see their GP and see what help they can get. But a lot of people, you know, when it just comes to stress eating, it's a very common thing, and I can just go through with them, you know, looking at their motivations to eat, what thoughts go through their minds, because your thoughts can determine your feelings, which can determine your behaviours. And if you have kind of crooked thoughts about food, or you have certain beliefs about food, you know, like I believe that skipping meals helps me lose weight, which it actually doesn't, you know, getting them to think through their own thought patterns, you know, engage that brain. Because the other thing is, the brain's got sort of two parts. There's the midbrain, which is like the automatic part, that's, you know, is the survival part of the brain, more primitive part. And then you've got the prefrontal lobe, which is the brain that helps you to sort of, you know, think about things, so you're less likely to regret your decisions. So it's, you know, your brain can be vying for, think of it as like a little chimp inside your head. You've got to control the chimp, which is the midbrain, and engage the frontal lobe.
I really like her attitude to how to visualise things that might be going wrong with your diet.
Are there certain foods that you would eat if you were stressed then, or could you just eat anything?
Do you mean what do people eat if they are stressed?
Does it tend to be one type of food? It
tends to be carbohydrates and sugars, fatty foods, because cortisol, which is a stress hormone, can encourage you to... It encourages sort of food cravings for fatty sort of sugary foods. Because if your body sees that you're stressed, it will try to get you to take on board more energy, if you like, so that you've always got a sort of fat storage ready for... the next sort of stressful episode. If you think about it, we're still cavemen living in cavemen's bodies, but obviously surrounded by an abundance of food.
Wear a few more clothes though, don't we?
Well, I can testify to that.
Unfortunately we've got these modern life That's the problem, is that we're still living in caveman's bodies. Because we don't, you know, the caveman didn't know where the next bit of food was coming from, but we actually do. And we're not being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, but our stress could be sitting in traffic. But you're not actually burning energy in traffic, you see, and yet you're still having those sugar cravings as a result of stress.
Sorry, Alison, but looking at your website, there's so much information on here, which is really, really interesting. I mean, in honesty, I always sit with my iPad when we're interviewing, and... Some websites are really boring, most of them are very informative. This is really, really informative and very, very interesting as well. So, one of the things which I noticed on here, you've got a thing here, swapping your large lattes for Americanos. Even something as small as knocking out the milk?
Yeah, it's one of my calorie shaving techniques. So, yeah, milky teas, you know, if you're having 10 or 12 of them a day, which some people do, they have a lot of coffees and teas, that milk adds up in terms of calories consumed. But what you can do is you can just have a few sort of calorie shaving techniques that are in your own mind. Like when I go to a restaurant, I'll only have 3 courses, not 2. Mm. Or, just downsize your crockery, you know, and have things in your head.
Because that's a big visual, isn't it? The smaller plate, because there's been quite a lot of work done on the size of the plates that we eat off of.
Absolutely, 12-inch plates now, not 11.
I realised this when I put them in the... Do you know, some kitchen cupboards aren't built to put the large plates in.
It's crazy.
You can't shut the door.
And that's the size of wine glasses. I mean, they are massive.
Now, Alison, you might be, as we were discussing earlier, yes. Alison mentioned
that
Just Women is like going out for a drink in a pub. I said, I think of it as going for a coffee.
I won't invite you then, Dory.
Well, you can.
Do you actually have classes at all then? You do?
So workshops, offer half day or full day workshops, and rather than just being sort of, I offer them to corporate companies and things, I offer them to people in their own homes. So like a Tupperware party, you can invite friends, maybe four plus people, and say, right, we're going to learn about mindful eating today, and just invite your friends, family, colleagues, and I can come and sort of teach you all about mindful eating.
So how do people find out about this? What's your website and contact details?
My website is www.mindfuleating.org.uk, and all the information is on there. And then if they want any more information, they can just give me a call.
Amazing.
It's a lovely website. I'd recommend everybody having a look at this. I like that idea of getting together at home with a group of friends and seeing how you could help one another lose weight together.
And you're certainly a good example. I often say on Just Women, it's a shame we don't have cameras in the studio.
I will be taking a picture afterwards, Alison.
So if people look at our Facebook page, they'll be able to see how fit and healthy you look.
They certainly will.
Talking of Facebook pages, I just want to say I've got my own Facebook page that has Mindful Eating, Emma Randall Mindful Eating, and it has daily tips.
Well, I'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women. That's Rebecca Newenham from Get Ahead VA, Katie Taylor from TT Communications, and of course Emma Randall from Mindful Eating. Three very interesting women, I'm sure you'll agree. And of course thanks go to my co-presenter today, Doreen Pike.
Well, it's been lovely working with you, Alison. Really enjoyed today's show, and I'd like to say thank you, and it's we're always keen to hear from local women who lead interesting lives, and ladies, that is you. So just contact us at our website, brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, or find us on Facebook too at Just Women BR. You can also listen to this programme again on Thursday evening at 8 o'clock, and it'll be on our website as a podcast. So thank you for listening today, and it's time to say goodbye from me, Doreen Pipe.
And from me, Alison Florence.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.